I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, joining us right now on the show, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is Washington tight end Logan Thomas. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. It's really good to have you on the show. I've actually asked for you in the past because I have really appreciated the way you've played and have enjoyed watching you play, especially when you've been healthy since you got here 2 years ago. First of all, how are you feeling? You know, how close to 100% are you?
I feel really good. I mean, it might not be 100, but I'm pretty close to it. Just got a little bit of explosiveness back in the knee, but I appreciate that. I appreciate those kind words.
So describe in your words, Logan, why and how your team has run off 6 wins in the last 7 games and gone from 1-4 to what right now is a pretty good playoff position. How did it happen?
Well, we're playing good football, and we're playing clean football. So we're not turning the ball over a whole bunch, and we're not having a whole bunch of penalties. If you can do those two things, you kind of control your own destiny. You just got to make a couple plays outside of that. We're doing a good job. We're playing confidently. We're playing for each other. Defense is playing out of their mind. And, you know, offensively, we're controlling possession and controlling the football.
You and Taylor Heinicke are more than just teammates, right? You're friends.
Oh, yeah, we're good friends, at least on my side. I can say it on my side. We're good. I won't speak for him.
I think he said the same thing before as well. So, you know, we see Taylor the player, and that's it. You see Taylor the player, the person, the teammate, et cetera. What is it about him that makes him a player that you guys believe in?
You know, it's just his persona, just the way he is as a person. And then when he comes on the practice field, he comes out here and practices hard every day, and he's not a liability. He's not out here making bad reads and bad throws. Like, he's a professional. But then when you get in the locker room and you just talk to him, and he does a good job of talking with everybody, and he gets on the same page with everybody, and, you know, he builds relationships. And that's one thing that, from everybody on offense to everybody on defense can get along with.
What do you think he does well, and what, as a former quarterback, and your perspective is obviously a unique one, what do you think he can improve upon?
What he does well is just the command of the offense. He knows what everybody's doing. He knows where everybody's supposed to be. If anybody's misaligned, he gets them lined up right. And it's a testament to, you know, what he does outside the building on what to do. And then things that he can do better at, you know, that's not my area of expertise anymore. But as anybody will say, it's just taking care of the football. And he'll probably say the same thing. So there's one or two plays a game that he'll be like, oh, man, I want that throw back. So, you know, for us, our success is just not turning the football over, running the football, and scoring in the red zone.
We're talking to Logan Thomas, of course, Washington tight end. You've been here since 2020, and you've played with a lot of different quarterbacks. It was Dwayne, it was Kyle Allen, it was Alex Smith, it was Taylor. In that first year, you had Ryan last year before you got hurt for a brief period of time, obviously. This year, Carson, and now Taylor again. I think there is this feeling that many of us have from the outside looking in, that there is more belief in Taylor when he's out there and the ability to kind of play quarterback and lead the team than almost anybody else you've had. Why is that?
You know, what I'll say is he's been in the system the longest, so that's what, football-wise, playing-wise, it kind of helps him in that way. But I think the greater belief just comes from just the guy of who he is, just how awesome he is as a human being, as a person, and he's just a lovable character and somebody that you just want on your side at all times. And so, you know, I feel like for him, as long as, when you got the love and support of your teammates, it makes it a little bit easier for you to just go out there and play too.
All right, one more question about the quarterbacks, and then I want to ask some questions specific to you. But, you know, as an ex-quarterback, I think your perspective is interesting. How is Carson coming along? What are you seeing from him in practice?
He's doing a good job. It looks like he's got his pop back. The ball's coming out of his hands clean, and he's starting to get a whole lot more comfortable. And for him, it's like he's starting to get more comfortable with the playbook too, which is a big, big thing for around here, because it's not just your normal, ordinary playbook. It's kind of unorthodox. So, but no, he's been itching to get back on the field. And when he did last week, he's been running smoothly, and the ball's coming out smoothly as well. So happy to have him back. And, you know, the guy's just taking all the things that have come with a grain of salt. And he hasn't changed who he is as a person one time, and which is awesome just to see, because obviously, some people could take it different ways.
Do you think that may have been some of the issues early on with some of the up and down play was just the playbook and him, you know, in a new system for the first time in his career?
Yeah, it's a tough system transition for sure. This one is just very different. Obviously, you know, it's one of those things where it's hard to pick up when you just get into the season because everything changes too. So, but you know, I think he did a good job for how quick and how, you know, ordinarily awkward it is early on in the season.
I remember talking to your coach, Ron Rivera, last year about you and the loss of not having you on the field, and he thought it was a very significant one. I remember asking him specifically, you know, Logan Thomas, Curtis Samuel, J.D. McKissic, who do you miss the most? And he said you. Now, they didn't have the benefit last year of really having Curtis at any point for a significant amount of time. But he talked about, you know, having a guy that was a quarterback and just your grasp of everything and how smart you are. And I would ask you, what are the benefits of being one of those players who played quarterback in college but now play a different position in the NFL? You know, you played quarterback for a few years to start your career in the league, but now you play tight end. What does being a former quarterback provide you in benefits at a different position?
Well, I think it helps you direct traffic as well. It's not just all throwing the quarterback. And, you know, I don't have to worry about getting lined up or where I'm supposed to be or what route I got, all that stuff. Like, the knowledge is there, but then I can also help other guys. Like, hey, you're supposed to be in this split on this position. And then outside of what we do, knowing the defense and what the defense is supposed to do or ordinarily should do based on the coverage or the blitz or whatever they're running. So it's just kind of being a half step ahead of what's happening.
Is there any other position you could have played in the league other than quarterback, or was your size always going to make tight end the best bet?
I think based off of size and athleticism, and God gave me some natural hands as well, I think tight end was the natural move. But growing up, I played a little bit of everything. I played safety, I played outside backer. I got recruited to play DN in places, so I think it was pretty much the normal transition, though, was to tight end. I want to stay on the offensive side of the ball anyway.
What'd you say? I'm sorry?
I said I would rather stay on the offensive side of the ball anyway because it's more fun.
I was going to say about your hands, and I was going to ask you about your hands, because you are one of those hands catchers. You're not one of those receivers or tight ends that lets it hit their chest and then sort of, you know, cradles it after that. You reach out, catch it with your hands, with your fingertips. I'm assuming you played a lot of sports and probably other sports well. But what is the advantage of being a hands catcher versus not, which, again, you see a lot of guys are not?
Yeah, so the hands give you a little bit more of a radius, to pull the ball in. And then contested catches, when you use your hands, they got to fight through your body, especially being a guy my size. You got to be able to, like, go through my back or through the side, and then your arm's got to be longer than my arm to get to the ball, which isn't very often when it comes to guys in my position and guys we go against. So kind of just lets you use your body as a shield, and if you don't, you try to let it get to your body, then, you know, the probability of them being able to get a hand on it goes up a whole lot more.
So we're talking to Logan Thomas. Logan and the team Sunday, 1 o'clock in the Meadowlands against the Giants, and the first of two straight games. Kind of a scheduling quirk, Logan, with the same team in back-to-back games with a bye week in between. Tell me about this first one. A very important game Sunday. What are the keys offensively for you guys to be successful?
Yeah, just a little bit more of the same. We got to be able to control the football. Got to be able to run it. Got to be able to pick up third down, first downs on third down, and control some of that clock. And then we have an opportunity to make an explosive play. We got to be able to take it. They're a very aggressive defense, so we got to catch them sometimes in their aggression and be able to make a play on it.
How many plays are in the playbook that have you taking a direct snap?
Well, I guess wouldn't everybody like to know that question?
Well, you took one right early in the season. I'm forgetting which game. Was it the Detroit game?
No, that wasn't me. That was Armani.
Armani took one. No, I remember that. Yeah. But didn't you take a snap this year or not?
No, I haven't taken one this year.
I've taken one
in years past.
All right. If both of you are up at the same time, who's the third string emergency quarterback?
Oh, it's me for sure. No questions.
No.
All right, I already got the helmet made up that has the green dot on it and everything.
Oh, you got everything. Okay, good. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate the time. Best of luck on Sunday.
Absolutely. Take care of yourself. Appreciate you having me on.
Logan Thomas, everybody. I like Logan Thomas a lot as a player. I think whether it was Alex Smith or Kyle Allen or specifically Taylor Heinicke, and I think if Ryan Fitzpatrick had quarterbacked last year with a healthy Logan Thomas all year, I think that he is a weapon. You know, his size, his athleticism, his soft hands. I mean, we've seen that over and over again. That catch he had against Houston on that little sideline route where it was a contested catch. But as he said, as a hands catcher, you extend the radius. And I can imagine, and I think I mentioned this to him after we were recording, he was a pretty good basketball player, and he said he got, he's got a couple D1 offers in basketball as well. Big-time weapon, big-time red zone weapon, a guy that Taylor can throw contested balls to just like he can to McLaurin. It's really important that he be healthy down the stretch for this team. He's going to go Sunday. He told me that afterwards, even though he's listed on the injury report as limited with a rib injury. And that means right now, by the way, it's time for the Centers for Advanced Orthopedics Injury Report. More physicians, more locations, more advanced care centered around one thing, that one thing being you. Visit CFAOrtho.com. So this is an important injury week here. After yesterday's practice, you had Gibson, Milne, St. Juice, and Trey Turner. All did not practice. Gibson, the latest to hit that injury report. And it really is starting to trend with no St. Juice and perhaps no Dax Milne again and perhaps no Trey Turner, which means Sam Cosmi may play guard with Lucas at tackle. And I think a lot of people think that Cosmi could be a great guard anyway. The no St. Juice for 2 weeks in a row, if that's the way it plays out, big loss, you know, although Christian Holmes accounted, himself pretty well. It's the Giants injury report that you really have to pay attention to this week. They have had significant players out in recent weeks. They were missing 3/5 of their starting offensive line against the Cowboys, and yet they still moved the football against Dallas. A good defense, for sure. They had the lead, let's not forget, against the Cowboys at halftime, 13-7, but they're going to get their center back, it looks like, this week, Feliciano. They're going to get Evan Neal back. He was a full go in practice yesterday, and they might get Adoree Jackson and Fabian Moreau back this week as well. Certainly Fabian Moreau looks like a possibility. Yeah, that's the Fabian Moreau who was here in Washington. He's become a starting corner in New York, and he missed the game on Thanksgiving. The Giants have not done a good job of running the football the last 2 weeks, and I'll talk about that when I get to the keys to a win over the Giants. And in part, it's been because they have been so banged up up front along their offensive line, and they are going to be, it looks like, much healthier Sunday. That could be a huge key to the game on Sunday. That was your Advanced Orthopedics Injury Report from the Center for Advanced Orthopedics. More physicians, more locations, more advanced care centered around one thing, you. Visit CFAOrtho.com. All right, when we come back, you'll hear a couple of things yesterday that both Jack Del Rio and Scott Turner said in their weekly press hits. And then we'll get to my keys to a win Sunday in the Meadowlands against the Giants. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show and the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
So Thursdays are the days that the coordinators talk, Scott Turner and Jack Del Rio. I actually sometimes enjoy those pressers with him, with those two guys, more than even the head coach during the week. I think you get a lot more detail from both of the coordinators. Now, you don't get a lot from Jack in particular, as we've discussed in the past. You know, I've talked before about how, you know, those of us in the media, we get sent the transcript of, you know, each press conference that the team holds. And the Del Rio transcripts have been like half a page pretty much for the last few years, where everybody else is multiple pages. But he's talked a lot more this year. You know, that'll happen when your defense is playing really, really well. But there were a couple of things that I thought were interesting from both of them yesterday that I wanted to play. The first one, the first few come from Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator. And we've had this discussion about Taylor Heinicke and him ranking last in the league per Pro Football Focus in turnover-worthy plays, meaning one in the league. The most turnover-worthy plays of any starting quarterback in the league have been Taylor Heinicke, by far, by the way. Whatever number two is, it's a significant distance between the number of turnover-worthy plays for Heinicke and the next worst, which I think may have been Zach Wilson the last time I checked. Anyway, this was Scott Turner on the turnover-worthy throws that Heinicke makes.
No, I mean, yeah, you don't want the ball to be in harm's way. You know, the first throw in the Houston game, you know, that wasn't a great decision, obviously. We coach the individual plays about, you know, good decision, bad decision. You know, it's different. Like, okay, you're giving a guy a shot. And I don't know. Like, I don't look at what PFF grades as a turnover-worthy play. Like, sometimes we're going to give our guy a shot, and maybe the DB got his hand on it at the end. Like, I don't know how they grade that. I wouldn't say that's a turnover-worthy play. But, you know, we're coaching him based on how we see it, you know, the decision-making process. And then based on how he does respond to that, that's how we respond to him.
I actually really liked the answer. As much as in recent years I've enjoyed some of the guests from Pro Football Focus that we've had on. We've had Nick Akridge on a lot recently. I like Sam Monson and Eric Eager and some of the other guys. But I thought it was interesting that he said about the PFF turnover-worthy plays. You know, I don't know, and I don't look at what PFF grades as a turnover-worthy play. Washington was the 32nd out of 32 teams to contract with Pro Football Focus. One of the reasons that teams have agreements with Pro Football Focus is they get an immediate grading on each of their players that played in the game. much faster than they put them together themselves. So essentially, when they're back on Monday morning after a Sunday game, if not Sunday night, they have the ability to at least look at what they deem to be a qualified grading system of their players. Now, they're going to go through and they're going to grade their players anyway, and they're going to eventually change the grades, you know, but move it up, move it down, however the way they see it, based on the one weakness that Pro Football Focus has more than anything else, and that is they don't know what the responsibility of the player is on any given play. That's a weakness. Now, you know, with a lot of, you know, certain kinds of plays, you know, zone runs, power runs, or duo runs, they kind of have an understanding of what the offensive linemen are supposed to do. They understand in cover three, cover two, quarters coverage, what the corners and safeties are supposed to do, what the backers are supposed to do. They have an idea. But I thought it was interesting that Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator of a team that is a client of Pro Football Focus, said, I don't look at what PFF grades as a turnover-worthy play. And he said, you know, sometimes we're going to give our guy a shot, and maybe the DB gets his hand on it. And I don't know how they grade that. I don't know how they grade that either. I think, you know, a turnover-worthy play is kind of intuitive for a football fan. I think we know by watching, you know, what a 50-50 ball is where a DB makes a good play. Is that really a turnover-worthy play? Is that a bad decision? No. I don't think we would grade it that way. But like he said, the Houston throw, or the throw at the end of the first half, which was a turnover, you know, and some others that we've seen that have been dropped. You know, there were four. Rasul Douglas had legitimately three interceptions in his hands in that Green Bay game and just dropped them. But I kind of like the fact that he's going off of his specific, did Taylor do what I wanted him to do on that play? I wanted him to give Terry McLaurin a shot. I wanted him to throw it to a covered Logan Thomas because we feel like we have an advantage in that situation. So I kind of like that answer from Scott Turner. There was something else from Scott Turner on the offense. So last week they used a lot of two tight end and three tight end formations when they were running the football. Did a really good job of running the football last week. I know that wasn't the best defense they faced, but man, it was Brian Robinson Jr.'s best game. And Scott Turner was asked on 12 and 13 personnel, for those of you that don't know what that means, that's one back, two tight ends is 12 personnel. 11 personnel would be one back, one tight end. Then you've got three receivers, all right? 12 personnel is one back, two tight ends. 13 personnel, one back, three tight ends. And they were in a lot of that last week. And Scott Turner was asked if that's, you know, based more on matchup or philosophical shift. Here's what he said.
You know, it's matchup based. You know, it fits B-Rob. You know, it helps him and the other backs as well too. But you know, like I said, every game's going to be different. You know, based on how we feel like we match up against their different personnel groups with our different personnel groups. You know, we could be in different looks.
Yeah, they could be, but I bet Sunday they're not. I bet there's a lot of 12 and 13 personnel Sunday against the Giants. The Giants have had a real difficult time stopping the run here recently. And with Gibson out, potentially out, we don't know that for sure. We'll know more later on today. But they're getting good production from Bates and Thomas and last week Cole Turner in some of those sets. This is who they are. This is who they've become. They've become a run-first team and really trying to be physical as a run-first team. Yeah, there's a lot of dressing it up pre-snap with all of the motions, which I think, by the way, have been very, very influential. And I think Turner's done a great job with that. But at the end of the day, they've got a much more vertical run game. You're seeing a lot more of, you know, the linemen going downhill instead of moving horizontally in zone runs. So you're seeing more power runs. You're seeing more counters. You're seeing more of the duo runs that Cooley used to describe, you know, where you've got linemen, you know, blocking downhill going forward, you know, looking for double teams, looking for the back to have maybe a linebacker to beat, and that's it. And they are creating an identity. You know, we talk about identity. Like, there are very few teams that really have identities. Pittsburgh has an identity. Baltimore has an identity. Kansas City, I guess, has an identity now. San Francisco is developing a bit of an identity. I mean, just a, you know, they are a zone run team and they are physical and fast on defense. Washington right now, they are developing an identity. They want to be a physical line of scrimmage team on both sides of the ball. Here's something else from Scott Turner yesterday. This was him talking about Jonathan Williams. Remember, Jonathan Williams came in and played last week. And I've known going back to last year when he played for the first time, I think in the Dallas game, the first Dallas game, that they really liked him. This was Scott Turner on the reliability and the usage of Jonathan Williams.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he has a really good role for us. You know, obviously as the third guy, he came in, had, you know, four really nice carries. He runs really hard, creates a little spark that way. So, you know, he's played well in other spots. He's the kind of guy that, you know, typical guy in the NFL is a backup type player that is just itching for an opportunity. And he's done a great job of when he's gotten that opportunity. And you know, the physical nature of this game, and as the year goes on, I'm sure he's going to get more and more, and we feel really good about him when that happens.
Yeah, they really do. And it's interesting, but I think in many ways, and I don't, you know, from my seat when I watch Antonio Gibson, I don't see much of a difference between the tackles. I think he's a physical runner too. I think Gibson's big and pushes the pile forward. Is he better out in space than the other two? Yeah, no doubt about it. But I don't think they lose a lot with Gibson between the tackles. But I think this team wanting to really thump people between the tackles, Robinson Jr. This is why they drafted him. And I think they really like Jonathan Williams, number 41, in that role as well. So don't be surprised, especially with Gibson now hampered a little bit, if we see a bunch of Jonathan Williams on Sunday as well. Lastly, this was the last one from Scott Turner that I wanted to play. He was asked on if it's been hard to be, you know, stubborn as it relates to the run game and running it as much as they have and the ratio in which they're running to passing while still wanting to have kind of a multifaceted offense. Here's what he said.
No, it wasn't. I mean, once, you know, we started having success with it, you know, it's not about like me or the numbers or anything like that. It's about trying to do what's best for our team to win. And for right now, like in the games that we've played, like that's what's happened. Now, there's going to be some times where it's not going to be that way, you know, and other guys are going to have to step up. And that's what this league's about and offensive football is about. But, you know, if it's not broke, you know, don't fix it.
Yeah. And right now it ain't broke. The run-to-pass ratio, the run-first mentality. And look, it's set up, you know, against a team like Atlanta, opportunities for Taylor to start off very quickly last week on those first few drives, that first and 10, 26-yard throw to Terry McLaurin. You're going to get teams that are going to start to, you know, move up a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage, crowd the box a little bit more, and it's going to create opportunities for some of that multifaceted offense that I think we all believe that Scott Turner would prefer. But he said right there, you know, it's not about me or the numbers. And that brings me to this, because Tommy said something to me yesterday on the podcast, which I thought was a really interesting point. He said, you know, the way they're playing football right now offensively, that's not going to get Scott Turner, you know, any sort of visibility in terms of a head coaching job. Now, some of you are rolling your eyes right now, but we talked about before the season started that if they were better offensively with all of their playmakers and they had a quarterback now that could push the ball down the field and maybe be a little bit more dynamic offensively than they've been. And in fact, let's face it, we thought before the season started there was a chance that the offense would carry the team more than the defense. Most of us thought that. And I even suggested over the summer, look, if this offense does, if Carson ends up being the right guy, and I wasn't sure about it, and I didn't think he would be the right long-term guy, but if they were better on offense, that name, if he continues, you know, if they end up having a really productive offense and they end up having a winning season, he's going to get, his name's going to be mentioned. Look, there were a couple of things preseason that were written about. Who are the guys that are going to be talked about towards the end of the year as candidates? And he was in a couple of those stories. But I'll tell you what, running the ball 43 times and throwing it 21, 22, 24 times, probably not going to do it when you're scoring 19 points a game and trying to win games 19-16 or 19-13. But, you know, the more important thing is he's got a job as an OC right now, and he's proven that he could adapt to not only what is, I think, what his head coach wanted, but really what the talent dictated and the, you know, the ability that they had really at quarterback to do. And I think he's done a nice job. I think, you know, Scott Turner, if somebody said to you right now, Scott Turner one day is going to be a head coach or he's going to get that opportunity, it's probably not going to come after this year because they're not really that good or dynamic offensively with respect to their passing ability. But what they're doing is working. I want to play some Jack Del Rio for you when we come back, and then I'll get to my keys to a win over the New York Giants on Sunday. Before I get to all of that, I want to tell you about Window Nation right now. They're doing the impossible. Despite the fact that costs are up, inflation is up, and rates are rising, Window Nation is giving you 0% interest for 5 full years on new windows. That's no interest payments for 60 months. In addition, you get 2 free windows with every 2 you buy with no limit. This winter could be even colder than ever, and it looks right now, just read Capital Weather Gang's story yesterday, this could be a very cold December. Temps are dropping. We're facing the highest energy costs in over 25 years, an all-time high, up as much as 28% from even last year. Well, stay warmer and more comfortable with new Window Nation windows. Add to your home's value as well. Lower your energy bills, of course, with incredible savings. And you won't pay any interest for 5 years. Plus, you get 2 free windows with every 2 you buy. If your windows are 10 years of age or older, if they are drafty, if they're cracked, if they're hard to open or they're hard to lock when you close them, you need new windows. The longer you've got these older windows, the more money you're wasting on your heating bills. Over time, Window Nation has saved their customers over $60 million on their energy bills. I promise you, Window Nation will take good care of you. Mention my name when you call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. You'll get a free estimate, so there's nothing to risk. They're giving you 0% interest for 5 full years. That's 2027. Before you'll be paying any interest on your new windows. Plus, you get 2 free windows with every 2 you buy, no limit. That means you're paying half price. You'll save thousands on your new windows and your energy bills, all the while upgrading the look and feel of your home. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Tell them that Kevin Sheehan sent you. Washington's 2 defensive tackles have been outstanding this year. John Allen, Daron Payne. We told you about Ben Standing's story yesterday about what the defensive tackle market is going to be like. It's going to be costly to extend Daron Payne. Ben will join us at 8 a.m. So you heard some of the Scott Turner stuff from yesterday. And yes, Lindley on Twitter, I do like Scott Turner, and I have liked Scott Turner. And if you're wondering why I am, quote, infatuated with Scott Turner, close quote, I just think that he has the potential to be a really good coordinator. And I know we've debated this a lot back and forth, and there have been times where I've said, you know, here on a Monday, did not like the way the game was called. I'm not saying he's perfection. I'm not saying he's elite at this point. But remember, this is just year 3 of him being an OC. You know, his first full-time OC job was here after taking, you know, the last few games of the Carolina season after Ron got fired. I think Scott knows what he's doing. I do. And, you know, I think that really the challenge for Scott Turner has been, you know, 5 different quarterbacks, right? Dwayne, Kyle, Taylor, Alex, Ryan, Carson, 6 different quarterbacks in 3 years. You know, that's a challenge. And by the way, none of them that good, really. None of them that, you know, great. Just kind of similar, right? Taylor and Alex, for different reasons, kind of similar. Good at running the offense, good at understanding the offense. I thought one of the things that Logan Thomas told us earlier this hour, and if you missed that, you can download the Odyssey app. Logan was great. A very bright guy, you can tell. And he said, you know, for all intents and purposes, one of the advantages that Taylor has over everybody else, He knows the system, and he said it's a complicated playbook. I think it's actually been less complicated here in recent weeks, and I'll get to that when I get to the keys to the game. But I think that that Taylor's understanding of the playbook, because he's been in it for much longer than Alex Smith or Dwayne Haskins or Kyle Allen. Kyle Allen was in it, actually. Kyle Allen would have been the guy, right? And one of the reasons they wanted to go to Kyle Allen earlier in that season is because he knew the playbook. And so, Logan referred to Carson as getting more familiar now with the playbook. That could have been part of the reason in his defense. Not that I'm a big Carson Wentz defender, that, he struggled a little bit and was up and down early in the season. Anyway, I wanted you to hear what Del Rio said about Daron Payne and the big jump that he's taken this season.
Yeah, we talked about it, because he's very disruptive. He's around, he's hard to block, and he's around, and opportunities are there. So for him, it was more about focusing on the finish, and I think he's done a good job of getting that done this year. The other part is just the maturity, some of our younger players, they're maturing and playing better. I mean, that's part of what we take pride in as coaches, is developing our guys, and I think he's developing. I think he's doing a heck of a job.
That's interesting, that last part, because I think part of why Daron Payne was considered to be kind of inconsistent and not an aggressive approach taken by the team with respect to extending him with a new contract is, Jack said it, the other part is, quote, the maturity. Some of our younger players that are maturing and playing better, that's part of what we take pride in as coaches, is developing our guys. I think he's developing. I think he's doing a heck of a job. I think one of the things we as fans sometimes really undersell is the job of coaches to develop players in many different ways, not just physically, technique-wise, but from a mental approach, from a maturity standpoint. And I think one of the reasons Del Rio is doing a great job is, I think, as a former player. And I also think, as I would guess this to be true, as a really strong communicator and leader among some of these young men. Doc said it to me the other day on the podcast about their assistant coaching staff, that they've got a really good staff. So important. And he was asked a follow-up to that on Daron, on how the maturity translates on the field. Here's what he said.
Maturity, whether it be how he handles disappointment, how he handles missed opportunities, how he handles the ebb and flow of the game, all those things. How he approaches his work every day, I think that's all part of it, As you play in this league, get some experience, get some exposure, you learn, and hopefully you grow and you mature. I think he's doing that.
You could be cynical and you could say, well, yeah, he's maturing conveniently because this is contract year. Okay, that's fine. He's still outrageously talented. He's not overachieving. He's now reaching that talent level. I think they've got to do their best to bring him back next year. I don't think there's any doubt right now that Daron Payne is one of the best five football players on the team. You could make the case he's one of the best three football players on the team. If it's Allen, McLaurin, three, it might be Daron Payne. And you in the league you have now, with all of the quick passing attacks and the importance placed more on corner in some cases than edge pass rushers, but the emphasis, and it's not, this isn't a new thing, but in recent years, call it the last 5 to 10, the importance of interior pressure, stopping the run on the way to the quarterback with your D tackles. You've got a combination of D tackles that is very rare in the NFL. This is your bread and butter. This is what's going to lead you and keep you competitive. I would not let him go. I would do everything I could to extend him. And you worry about Sweat next, and then you worry about Chase Young, a year from now. And the quarterback contract, whatever that looks like, will obviously have a big bearing on that. All right, let's get to how Washington beats New York on Sunday. All right. Washington wins in the Meadowlands against the Giants. A matchup of 7-4 versus 7-5 in December. It'll be cold, but sunny is the forecast. 43 degrees sunny. Not a lot of wind right now in the forecast. Look, this isn't that hard watching these two teams here recently. Washington wins Sunday against New York if, number one, they run the football against what has become a bad run defense. The Giants have given up big yards in recent weeks. Dallas ran it against them. Detroit did it the week before that. Houston, the week before that. You know, this week, like last week, I think has a chance to be a bigger offensive day for Washington than the ones they've been producing. Now, they didn't produce big yards or big points last week, and I thought they could. You can run it on New York, guys. They're 26th ranked in rush defense in the NFL. They're 30th in the league in yards per carry allowed. They give up 5.2 yards per rush. This is what Washington wants to do. I think they should be able to do it. I also think that some of the stuff they did with Taylor and Terry early in the game with some play action will work too. So you run the ball, yes. You use some play action off of that. But running the ball is the basis. It's the root for all of this. It's their ticket. I love the job the offensive line did last week. I thought they created more push, more paths for the running backs. Obviously, Robinson Jr., last week more than any other. I love the stuff that Scott Turner puts together in terms of, you know, the motions pre-snap. But I don't know. I could be wrong, but I think they've really simplified a lot of what they're doing in the run game. I think you saw it against Philly. I think you saw it against Houston. I think you definitely saw it last week. You know, it's not – Cooley used to, you know, share with me the duo play, which he hated when Jay Gruden ran it. And it's more of a power run. It's more of a vertical run. You don't have linemen going horizontally in zone runs. You've got them looking for those double teams against a front four. And then in most cases, leaving the running back one-on-one with a backer in a hole. And you saw that last week. You know, they ran some counter last week. And obviously, they've got their jet sweeps that they actually run when it's not just sort of ornamentation. Pre-snap is motion. But, you know, Doc said to me on my podcast earlier this week that, you know, they've turned physical at the line of scrimmages. And, yeah, it's one of those, I think, for them right now, it's kind of a manhood issue up front, both sides of the ball. And I think this line is doing what it does best, which is run block and run block vertically. Do they mix in some inside zone? They do. But there's not a lot of tricking other than in the pre-snap stuff. And really, that's not tricking anybody on offense. It's just tricking people on defense. I like what they're doing with this run game. I really do. And I think they should be able to run it against a team that's really struggled against the run. Number two, they beat the Giants if they stop the run. Again, I know that this is cliche and this is pretty simple, but it's the formula right now for Washington. The Giants are number six in rush offense in the NFL. Last week, you'll remember that Washington faced the third-ranked rush offense in the league in Atlanta, and they didn't hold up well against them. This week, they face a team that can run it if they're healthy, and this is a huge key to Sunday's game. The Giants have not been healthy the last few weeks along their offensive line. They were missing three-fifths of it against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. Saquon Barkley in the last two games, after having big games, rushed for 150-something yards against Houston in a 24-16 win, and then the last two games, 26 carries, 61 yards. Ouch! I mean, that's bad. But he didn't have his offensive line in front of him the last 2 weeks. They're scheduled to get a lot of those guys back on Sunday. That could be a huge bump for the Giants in the run game. It'll be a big deal for them. You know, Washington's going to face Daniel Jones as part of the running game. You know, by the way, they're going to face Daniel Jones on the move a lot. You know, I watched the Giant-Cowboy game again. Man, he is always on the move. You know, there is a lot of quarterback keepers, you know, slash bootleg. You'll face some read option. You'll face some even designed runs. You're going to face a lot of quick throws on rollouts. You know, he has 451 yards rushing on the season. 36 rushes, by the way, for first downs, Daniel Jones on the season. The Giants are going to watch what Atlanta did last week with their outside zone runs in particular, I think, and with Mariota as a read option threat. Personally, I don't know that Daniel Jones is as good as Marcus Mariota is running the read option. Mariota was outstanding last week. He's a great ball handler. He's a great decision maker. And he looked like a younger Marcus Mariota. He almost looked like an Oregon version of Marcus Mariota. With the acceleration, there were a couple of runs that were almost gone. Shoestring tackles. I'm not sure if the Giants are as capable as Atlanta. Logan Paulson last week told me on my podcast on Saturday, he goes, Atlanta's the one team left that they're going to have a difficult time stopping in the run game. He was dead right. I don't know about what the Giants or San Francisco or Cleveland or Dallas can do, but he was right about Atlanta. Shocker to me. You know, I didn't think anybody could run it against this defense with the way they had been stopping the run. But if they can stop the Giants from running the ball and force Daniel Jones to throw it, take your guess, by the way, on who they're going to throw it to. Darius Slayton, number one, Richie James. They lost Robinson a few weeks ago. You know, Jones completed passes to nine different receivers in the loss to the Cowboys, which, once again, I'll remind everybody, they led that game 13-7 at halftime, and it was a 14-13 game, Dallas leading by one late in the third quarter when the Giants were on the move and went for a fourth and one at midfield and got stopped, and then the game went sideways. But they were in it. They've been in a lot of their games. Detroit's the one team that really hammered them. But the Giants are kind of where Washington is offensively. They don't want a ton of throws. They want a ton of runs. And by the way, their throws are going to be quick throws. They're going to be closer to the line of scrimmage. Now, you're going to see Jones on the move much more than you've seen Taylor Heinicke. But Jones, in the last two losses to Detroit and Dallas, had to throw it 79 times. The game before that, albeit against Houston, he was 13 of 17. That's what they want to do. They want Barkley to end up with a $140 on 26 carries, maybe a $150, and for Daniel Jones to be 13 to 17. You know, let's see if the Giants learned anything from Atlanta, if they're capable of matching it. If they do and they run it, it's game on. Number three, Washington beats the Giants on Sunday. If they really cover the short stuff and tackle well, you're going to have Jones and a lot of movement, shotgun or under center, more shotgun. He's going to roll out. He's going to throw to the motion receiver short. He's going to screen it to Barkley. You know, they're looking for lots of different ways to get the ball into Barkley's hands. You're going to see some wide receiver tunnels, and he'll take the deep shot too. And by the way, he's got a good big time arm. But you've got to be able to tackle the short stuff right away and not let it break out, which it did against Dallas a few times. You know, a line of scrimmage throw on a bootleg to the motion guy who takes it for 27 yards. You're going to have to cover that and tackle well. Washington's been an outstanding tackling team. They really have been. And then lastly, I'll throw this in. This feels like a game to me where the kickers are going to be huge. Joey Sly, special teams player of the month in the NFC. You know, he's made 14 of his 15 kicks since the Green Bay game. All right, Gonneau. Remember Graham Gonneau? Started his career here. Both of them are capable of big leg long kicks. And it wouldn't surprise me if this is a game in which both offenses are able to make a couple of first downs here and there and get into that outside long-range field goal area and then get bogged down, and kickers could end up being the deciding factor. Joey Sly was, for all intents and purposes, against Philadelphia with the 58 and the 55-yarder. Gonneau's capable. He had a 58-yarder or 57-yarder to open up the scoring against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. Wouldn't surprise me if you see a couple of 50-yard field goals, a couple of long ones, and you know, maybe 2 to 3 made field goals per team in a game that feels very much like 19-16, one way or the other. So kicking could be a big part of this. Ben Standing next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.